interview with Mordechai Ben-Horat on August 10th, 2006.
So it's okay if we do this in English? So, Mordechai, there's a long story. You have a very long and interesting story. And why don't we start at the very beginning? Why don't you tell me when you were born? And in what neighborhood in Baghdad?
Well, I tell you about Baghdad and about the background when I was youth and the others. The description, it is very, it was written in my book.
Right.
Yes, at the beginning, I don't think that I have more than I wrote in the book.
Right. Essentially, I'm going to ask you
about Baghdad, Iraq. I mean about the first time when I was there, before I came to Israel for the first time. And also when I came to Israel, it is also in the book, all the story, how I got to Israel. And if we talk through about the period from that time, for the mass immigration until today, I wasn't there in Baghdad, I mean the previous years. Even though I got passport, Iraqi passport, I could have gone to Baghdad. But when they started to kidnap, I thought it is better for me and for the state of Israel not to go to Baghdad. But we are in contact with Baghdad all the time. I sent people to Baghdad. And do we... Yes, last year, last year, 2 years ago, after the occupation of Iraq.
Okay.
We brought from there books and we brought many registration of property and ktubot, the death. This is the registration. It's very important. We got them from Baghdad.
You got death certificates.
Yeah. Now...
Do you got death certificates of people who were hanged? In like 1969 and 1949, things like that?
Well, about the you know, what we had at that time, we made survey of the cemetery in Baghdad.
Yeah.
And where those are buried.
Yeah.
I have this map, you know, it is this map of the cemetery. This one, yeah.
Okay.
We made this a survey in Baghdad. 2 years ago.
So it's still there.
And about the story of those nine, it is written. You find it in books in the library downstairs. Now the community in Baghdad, it is about 15 people only.
Right.
Most of them are old people, all the 80, 70, 65. And recently, I mean 5 months ago, a man, Yaakov Sharabani, was kidnapped. Still is kidnapped.
Wow.
We know nothing about him.
Really?
Yes, and he, the man who got married at the border between Jordan and Israel, why? Because they had
to be.
But
what happened at the border between Jordan and Israel?
He was married. He got married there.
Oh, he got married.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And with a rabbi from Israel.
I see.
A rabbi from Israel. He came to Jordan, and he made the marriage.
Ah, okay.
Then they went back to Baghdad. When they returned to Baghdad, after a short time, he was kidnapped.
Yeah.
Now the his wife is still there in Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
From all the synagogues we had in Baghdad, there were about 53 synagogues.
Right.
Still, there is one Meirut Wick.
Right.
It is still. It is not acting the last year, 1 year, 1.5. The community afraid from looters.
Right.
So they closed it, and the synagogue is guarded by Muslim and Christian and some of the day. And now the office of the community is also closed. Because they are fled from looters.
Is there any information about Sharabani?
No information. I mean, there are many rumors. We don't know exactly whether his brother, who lives in Baghdad, still living in Baghdad, he was part of the kidnapping. Or because he was a wealthy man, Yaakov Sharabani. And exposed the what they have, the car, nice car, and many rings, and many rings, and many. So I don't know, we don't know yet nothing about him.
Are you able to get information? Do you have people there?
Yeah, we start, we tried all the time, through the government of Iraq, through others, through the American. We couldn't get information where is he. The kidnappers, they were in contact with his wife to get transfer. That's, but I don't know whether this is, it is, how it feels. But the man, he knows better, his contact with the wife is Edwin Shuker in London. You spoke to him?
Yes, I spoke to Edwin. I'm in touch
with him. Yeah, well. And we express all the time, we change our information, he and myself. Uh-huh. And nothing he knew. I spoke to him only yesterday. Edwin Shuker.
How are you able to communicate with the wife and with other Jews? Can you just pick up the phone and call them? Or are they afraid to communicate with Israel?
No, the wife speaks to, not to Israel, to London.
Okay. Yeah. So she feels free to talk to.
Yes. Contact with Israel, I did it yesterday to speak to Baghdad.
And you can call her.
I have somebody, is even though he's afraid very, very much.
Yeah.
Yes, but I talked to him because I wanted something to do with the authority of Iraq to get from the community, from the office, to get some registration.
Right.
Yes, but he recommended not to do it now. Mm-hmm. The situation is very bad in Baghdad now.
Right. Now, why is it important for you now at this point to get death certificates and other formal documents?
Well, this is the
For
the Jewish community in Baghdad. Is that when we have registration from 1936, and when we got the books from there, this is a long story.
Yeah.
It took us 1 year and a half to get the books and to get,
books?
To keep it in Sfarim.
Sfarim
of philosophy and the manage and the one of the book was printed in 1408.
Wow. So books belonging to the Jewish community.
Jewish
old
community,
books.
Yeah.
And they're still there sitting where?
No, we got them here now.
Where were they sitting?
Well, they first in 68. Mm-hmm. I was informed that one of the pastors, Israelis, he recalled the Iraqi people to go back to Iraq.
Yeah.
And he went back to Iraq. And they took him, television, radio against Israel. And afterwards it was a burden on the army of Iraq.
Right.
And on the community also. He used to come to community and to squeeze money.
Yeah.
And then once he informed the community this is in danger. If something happens to him, please make the service, the death service.
Yeah.
And after a short time they killed him. And they called the police, the army, called the community to get his box, but not to open it. They took the box and they buried the box. This man informed the authority at that time that there was books, there was registration, there was many things at the Mesuda Shontov synagogue and the community and Mir Twigs. And the authority came and took them to the Mukhabarat. I mean, Mukhabarat, this is the security authority of the Iraqi. And after the occupation, looters, they got into, and they took them out. And we bought them from the looters.
How did you locate the looters?
Oh, it's very complicated. Very complicated.
How we got there. A lot of hard work to get to the right people.
Yeah. And so this is the way those books. Still, I think they have more books there in Baghdad, and we have to make all the efforts to rescue them. Because this is the history of the community,
right.
And registration, and death, and you know, when we got a list of deaths. One of the people, Israelis, he referred to us. Please, I want to know when my grandfather was
killed.
We want to make askara.
Yeah.
Exactly, we found his name, and we gave him the exact date. This is the importance.
So people probably come to you all the time with questions like that.
Yeah, they are coming.
Part of your business here.
For us, yes, they are coming all the time.
And you have an archive. You have archives here where you can...
We have many archives. We have books. We have letters. We have in contact with Iraq all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the state of these last 15 Jews? What kind of state are they in? Are they mostly elderly?
Well, I tell you, some of them, one, the head of the community, we call the head, Naji Gabriel, I think.
Yes, okay.
Yes. It's not exactly the man, he's afraid from his cello, yeah. And he works, he has a store in Georgia. Church or market,
yeah.
A small story has, and the others are working here and there. The community has also income,
yeah.
And from that income, they from time to time they give to the members.
Right.
They give the fees. They give shemen. I mean, oil or sugar or many things.
How does the community have income? Aren't the remaining Jews?
There is a very good woman, Marcel. She is acting in the community. She is keeping all the what kind of the money and they have now money. I know they have about $150,000. I think they have the community. They spent on the cemetery. We sent money from the Jewish agency to restore the cemetery. And they put there more than $150,000 in the cemetery, new cemetery.
They put all their money into it?
From the community.
All their $150,000?
The community, yeah. And the cemetery, this is the new one.
Yeah.
When I say new one, the old one was about on 40 dunam. It was a big cemetery. These people, I mean, the people buried from 1,000 years, 1,000, more than 1,000. And 68, suddenly, the president of Iraq called the community that to evacuate the land and to transfer the death, the bones,
right.
And he gave them was 40 dunam, they gave him 6 dunam.
What year was that?
New one. So they took all the bonds together and some of them sent separately. It is very sad.
What year was that?
What?
What year was that?
It was 68.
68.
And the work they took about 1,000 people, employees, to deal with the transferring of the cemetery.
Wow. So now the new cemetery.
Yes, now the new. This is the new one. This is the new one. It is about 35%. There are names. And another 10 or 20%, they are numbers.
Okay.
And the other, nothing.
Because
no
really
names,
of,
yes. No names, no, no.
Wow.
This is the cemetery now.
I interviewed Zuhair Sassoon the other day.
Me?
Zuhair Sassoon.
Sassoon?
Sassoon, Zuhair. The grandson of Sassoon.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And he told me that you were able to find his grandfather's grave.
Yes, we tried. We couldn't get them.
But
I mean, no,
they did get it.
No. The head of community, it was Yeheskel Shemtov.
Yes.
Sassoon Khduri. We know it. We know it.
Yes, we know it. Yeah.
We know it, and we took the pictures of the. Now we have pictures of every grave.
Ah, okay.
We have them here.
Yeah. I mean, if they just took all the bones and put them in a different cemetery.
Yeah, no. There is some of them, they were settled, but without names.
Uh-huh, I see.
Yeah, they took them separately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the contact with the community.
Right.
Now when the immigration came to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
It was very difficult for them.
Right.
In tents, wooden huts. They suffered very much.
Yeah.
At that time, I brought 105,000 straight to Israel or via Cyprus.
Right.
And then other 15,000, they came from all part of from Iran and others and came to Israel. From 48 to 52, they came to Israel about 124,000 Jews,
mm-hmm.
Iraqi Jews. Now in Israel, there are 244,000 Jews. They are the third large group of the Jewish community, of
a Jewish
population. Another 40,000 outside Israel.
Yeah.
You know, in,
are you including their children?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All together, there are 290,000.
Okay.
And
that's just in Israel.
If you see, you know, their situation now, they are very important element in Israel.
Yeah.
Very vital element. I mean, I'm not talking about ministers or cabinet. I'm talking about doctors, about researchers, head of hospitals,
mm-hmm.
and in all aspects of life, they are recognized. The Iraqis now recognized by the other people. This is the best immigration was absorbed by the state of Israel. From the Orient, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
after the immigration in 50 and 51, did you visit the Ma'abarot frequently?
Oh, yes, it was. Not only I used to see the Ma'abarot, at that time I was studying university after
mm-hmm.
I came from Baghdad as refuge. As rescued and came back to Israel, I started to study the university. And I took BA and then half MA. By the time, I was also interested in about the Jews, Iraqi Jews. And I was called once from the head of absorption in Israel to come here to Or Yehuda, Sakia, Kfar Anna they called. There were four transition camps, Ma'barot. There were about 12,000 people here, 14, 12, and 14, in tents and wooden huts, and called me to be a mayor, head of this.
Head of what was essentially just a camp then?
It was in 1955,
yeah.
December 55. It was very difficult here. Mm-hmm. When I came, it was very difficult. You know, we lived in Holon, not far from Or Yehuda. And when it is rainy and difficult weather, I come at home and I say to my wife, I feel so bad that we are here in the bed and covered very well and so,
right.
And people there, they are in the tents and wooden huts.
Right.
But I'm very happy that we did our best to get them out of from the Ma'barot, from the tents and wooden huts, and to put them in better accommodation.
Right.
It took us about 8 years.
8 years. So
yeah.
You were there from 1950?
50? No, 58. We started in 58. The building, I mean, 55,
right.
I was a mayor, tents and wooden huts, struggling with the difficulties.
Right.
58, start to build.
Right.
The state of Israel are able to start build houses.
Right.
When I say houses, 55 square meters. 62 square meters.
Small.
Yeah. This is for the families. And little by little, the situation was better, was improved. And now this is the city, it is 34,000 people here now.
Mm-hmm.
I was a mayor for 14 years.
14 years, from 1955?
From 55 until 69. And then it was 4 years, I was both member of Knesset and mayor of Or Yehuda.
4 busy years.
I used to come to the office of the council at 6 in the morning to prepare to the security work and then go back to go to Knesset Jerusalem, to stay in Jerusalem until the evening, after evening. I then came back also to the council. That I used in 4 years, but in those 4 years, it was a very, very help to the city, because when I was at the Knesset, I knew the budgets, I knew the how to get money, so we got very good money for the community, and also for the Morishet. For the
Morishet. So when did the Morishet start?
The Morishet, we in 73, the dream, it was 73, 71, and 73 we started the building.
Mm-hmm.
70, we had difficulties with the contractors, and then until 88. Only in 88 we opened the
Why did it take so long?
Why? Because short of money at that time.
Yeah.
And the contractor we had was bad. He was the cheapest one in tender, you know.
Yeah.
And we made a mistake. We took the cheapest.
Yeah. And he didn't do a good job there.
Yeah. And
Now, why do you have trouble raising money? Because Iraqi Jews sitting in London and in Israel.
Not easy.
Did you get money from the government?
Not easy, that's right. I got from the government, Jewish agency, and also, I say Iraqis, it was a man who came from Baghdad in 1970, and he donated about $260,000. And then another one from San Francisco, Thomas Murad, late Thomas Murad. He also put, so with the money of the government and Jewish agency, so we could have finished the building. 88, and those took us about 8 years to gather information, to gather songs, folklore, history, and many things for the museum. So 88, we got all of them, and 88 finished, although we put it into the museum.
Okay. So where did you gather all that material from?
From people, from Israeli and from outside also. We got, you know, many people, they brought Izal, they bought this, you know, the item, they brought gold, they bought many things. And what you have seen, have you seen?
Yeah, yeah. Downstairs.
What you have seen, most of this from that time.
I see. Okay.
We are getting all the time, we are getting. And we have now, we built a safe, third floor.
Yeah.
A safe to keep all the new materials we are getting to the museum. Under the very sophisticated methods of how to keep the those items we are getting.
Expensive items.
Yeah.
I see. So it's a big safe that holds. Oh,
70 square meters.
I see. Okay. So what do you think this museum has achieved? What do you think this museum has achieved? What are you proud of?
I get first of all, we want in those 4-6 months, coming 6 months, we have to finish all what we planned to make, to design about 14 new subjects are not exposed now in the museum.
Oh, these are your plans?
Yes.
For the next quarter?
No, the plan it is actually that we have to do it.
Okay.
And then, second, we have to make some stairs from downstairs to the second one, second floor.
Yeah.
And many other, the contractor will start, I guess, in the coming 1 month. Will start. And then to design.
Right.
The design will finish, I guess, January or February next year.
So you know,
we design many halls on name of people who gave us money for their dear people, you know, Jessica. And so we have to finish them and to call them to open the all this. This is, and then when we finish everything, we say next year, the beginning of next year, we have to go to projects. Projects, I mean, for encyclopedia, what I said.
Okay.
Other project, research projects. Many things that we don't do it now. Okay, we are not able, first of all, because of the short of finance.
Uh-huh.
And the second thing, that I can hire people to pay them salaries to do some value work here.
What kind of research do you needs to be done? What kind of research do you want to do here?
You know, many things we have subjects we like, for instance, First World War, first one, when they took thousands of people to Turkey, at that time, Istanbul and north, and they vanished, they finished.
Wow.
I have two ankles of mine. They were took as soldiers and they finished, they are not. One of them, in his name, Mordechai.
Aha, I see your name for him. That's
yeah.
I don't remember that.
And there are many, many of this, like this. And subjects, you know, there are other subjects, how we leave it, because everyone who suggests subject matter, please keep it now. We can't do it. So afterwards, we can be able to do it. And then today, this is the only museum in Israel of a diaspora. Our diaspora museum, there is diaspora in Mount Zion. After this, we are the only museum who exposed the Western and East. No Yemenite, no Polish,
right.
No German, nothing. This is the only museum.
Right. Of a particular diaspora.
Yes. So look, until now, 450,000 people came here. Yes.
Wow.
450,000. Among them, 170,000 students that are coming here.
So students come from high school?
From high school, from universities, high school, and kindergarten also. From kindergarten to university.
What are you proud of here? What do you think that you've achieved?
So that's what I want to achieve, you know.
No, not what your plans are, but what have you achieved until now? Aside from the fact that, like you just said, that you're the only museum representing a particular diaspora, a particular community.
Yes, I am. You know, this is.
What's wonderful? What's good about what this museum?
Well, I want to complete it and then to be the one who we are copied by others.
Right.
They come here,
right.
Persians. They come North Africa. They come from Poland, they come from Romania, and they say, they ask, how did you do it?
Right.
And I tell him, look, you find the crazy people, crazy man, who won't get salary.
Yeah.
You will do it without salary.
Mm-hmm.
And then, without the time, all those family will be invested in the
right.
And then he will do it, he will do the job. So it's not important to find the crazy, not over there.
Why do you think it's worked? Why has this museum worked? I mean, obviously it's because of your hard work, but the community helped.
You know,
why do they care? Why does the community care?
You know, when the Jews from Iraq came to Israel, they were asked very nasty questions. Have you got electricity there? Have you got university? Are you and many silly questions. They knew nothing about the Iraqis.
Mm-hmm.
University they knew.
Right.
When I'm a member of Knesset, I was called by university, Hebrew University, and to interesting me about research, so one of the researchers. I came to university. They took me to the cell, and what I found many boxes of written researches and many things about the Eastern, about the Jews, Faradim, Iraqis and others. And I told them, you know what's the problem of yours? This is in the cell, but if you take it out upstairs, and you still, you make it a work,
right.
So you will discover who are they, the Yemenites, who are the Iraqis, who are their history, their background.
Yeah.
So they.
It shouldn't be sitting in the cellar.
They didn't know.
Right.
They knew nothing about the newcomers.
Yeah.
But little by little, the Iraqis, they brought with them to Israel. About 17% from all doctors, they were in Israel at that time. They brought about 11% from all educators and teachers who were at that time in Israel. So they little by little they discovered this immigration, this Aliyah, and then. I say it very modest,
uh-huh.
And I think we contribute in the last 30 years,
mm-hmm.
very much for this information to be separate among people, the Israeli people in Israel. Also, no, the other day, 2 days ago, it was somebody who was here. We worked together. I was the mayor here, and he was one of the authorities. I knew him at that time. He says, he wrote me a letter, and he wanted to see me. And the letter, he said, I was astonished. I was so, when he saw everything here, I discovered many things I didn't know. He said, when he came here, he said, how did I come here? He says, I came because one of the activists, women, she was here and visited with a group. And she recommended before him to come and to see. So this is everyone now discovering and discovering. They're coming from outside, from students, teachers. Last week, it was a group of about 60 people, teachers. 2 weeks ago, there were another 100 teachers from all over the United States. They came and they listened. They asked me to come and to speak, and I, when I have time, I do it. You know, from me, they took the... take the information about the immigration, about many things. They know they have something to say.
Right. Now, you've made a big impact in Israel, and the story of the Iraqi Jews in Israel is known. It's known now, I think.
Yeah.
But in the U.S., you can't say the same thing.
But?
In the U.S., it's not the case. In the U.S.,
yeah.
I mean, when I went to school, I went to a Jewish day school, a very good Jewish day school called Solomon Schefter. And we
Which one?
Solomon Schefter. It was a conservative Jewish day school. It was a reshet, the whole network. We didn't learn the story of any Mizrahi Jews. We only learned the story of the European Jews. And, you know, I went to school in the 70s and 80s, and now things are probably different. But anyway, do you think that there's work to do in the U.S. as well? How can you change the way people think about the Jewish
yes.
community?
You know, I feel it through the website. Mm-hmm. People writing, Iraqis, Muslims,
right.
and others. I think I hope I have now. And he see up our website, ours, and he saw it was touched music, because we have music also. He says, God, this place, and he wanted to know whether we are safety.
Whether we are what?
Well, from me, sent from Iraq.
Okay.
Yeah.
And God wanted to know whether we're what? Who sent me?
Yeah, no. Now he say about the bombing, about the many, and he asking whether we are safety.
Oh, safe. Okay.
Yeah. And many others, and Jews. They say Iraqi Jews. My grandmother was so. My grandfather was so. Please, I want to know whether this and many questions they say. We answer what we can from our registration, our books, our information.
Iraqi Muslims are coming to you.
No, I mean those who are special. They when they ask specific questions are Jews.
Right.
But I mean the others, the Iraqis, they have once. It was, I think, two, three years ago. He wrote to me. He said, "I'm ashamed of my brothers, the Iraqis. They didn't do what you did, the Jew."
That's amazing.
Yeah. You know, but when I say about encyclopedia, if we finish it, so we can send lecturers to universities outside and to finance it. And now I'm working on a subject about the Iraqi world, Iraqi Jews in all the time. I mean, I want organization of Iraqi.
World Iraqi Jews.
World Iraqi Jews. And we have now, we are preparing representatives from Israel, and then from other New York and London and others, and to gather them once in Washington or in London next year.
Okay.
And this is the first action will be the communal property in Iraq.
I see. Trying to get back the
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean schools, synagogues, markets, and the
holy site.
Yeah.
Is Edwin Shuker working with you on that?
Edwin Shuker, this is one of these activities.
He
will organize in London, and Maurice Shohat also in New York and
in Washington.
Yeah.
Right.
What?
Now, I read your book, but I really, part of the idea of the book, of this book that I'm working on, is to get your own story in your own words. I mean, I could sit down and I could summarize your book, but I'd rather have you tell your story in your own words. Now, I know this could take hours, but let's try to do it in a short time. We'll just, because I just like to get your own story in your own words.
Yeah.
So, about the Aliyah, about, you know, when you were born in Iraq and so on. So, do you mind if we do that? Can I try to summarize? I mean, I know that there are many, many stories, and you can't possibly tell everything that was in the book, but, you know, I've made a list of the important things that, I went through your book and I made a list of the things that I want to hear you say in your own words.
I tell you, I regret the fact that I didn't have time to write about my activities in Israel.
Right.
Since I came to Israel.
Right.
All the activities, the parliament, the cabinet, and the others, and I didn't have time to do it.
Right.
And this is a lot of work, lot of ideas, lot of protocol in the Knesset, and 16 years in the Knesset.
Right. So sit down and write it now. Yeah. You can write it
out. I don't know. Now I'm working on they are translating.
Uh-huh.
This is about finishing in Russian.
Ah, really?
The book.
That's great. From Baghdad.
Baghdad. Because there are here more than 1 million Jews from Russia,
right,
in Israel. So it is very important to know that they recognize the Iraqis. Who are they?
Right.
For many things, for also they know the community, and then I want them to come here to the museum.
Right.
1 million, you know, it's not.
Right, it's a big population.
Yeah, to come to see who are the Iraqis.
And the idea also is that they're immigrants as well, and they'd probably be interested in hearing. They'd probably also be interested in hearing the story of another group of immigrants who came long before they did and how they succeeded.
Because, you know, start the integration of the Iraqis in Israel must more than any other tribe in Israel, with Romanian, with Polish, Iraqi, with Polish, with Iraqi, with Russian, Iraqi, with others.
Right.
And this is, I don't think, this is way of behavior of the Iraqis all over the world, not only Israel, when they are outside also.
Mm-hmm.
They are so involved, they are so active within the society where they live.
Can I go back and ask you some ancient history? Can I go back and ask you to tell some old history?
Yeah.
And I again, I'm asking you questions that are, the answers are all in the book, because I've read it myself, so I know the story, but I'm asking you so that we can, you know, have it in your words and put it in the book. So one of the first things that you write about in To Baghdad and Back is your experience with your own family and during the Farhud, a Muslim neighbor protecting you.
Yeah.
So can you tell that story?
Well, I tell you, it was a tension, big tension, mm-hmm. at that time. And my nephew came to us as a host. He was at that other our house.
Right.
We were in special a neighborhood, southern Baghdad, northern Baghdad. They came there for, they come people, they want to visit in the summer and others. It's very, very good weather and the river and Dijla, Tigris River.
Oh, your house, you had a tap on the Tigris River.
Yeah. And our nephew, he came to us and was on the telephone. My mother traveled to Baghdad. It's about 25 minutes. And to inform his family that he is safety.
Yeah.
And she faced mob in Baghdad. She was covered, of course, with abaya, but they didn't know whether she is Jew or not. When started to speak to her, they discovered she is not Muslim. And she was saved by one of the league, the soldiers who came from Jordan at that time. Mm-hmm. The British called them here in the Baghdad to reoccupy Baghdad. And they came here, and she was saved. She was brought back to our house. When I say that neighborhood, some of them were Jews. Mm-hmm. My father started with his house in this neighborhood, and he brought people, my family, some of them, and others, and it was half Jews, half of the neighborhood, or the street Jews. And we are attacked by Arabs. You know, without weapon, with many cracks with the wheel, and they attacked the house. And you know what Jews can do? We put tables, we put chairs, and no. We had a neighbor. He was a colonel, this Iraqi army, and he was busy at that time, was outside the house. His wife, we didn't know her, I mean, we had no connection with them. She came with a grenade and pistol to them, told them, if you don't move, that I am exploding the grenade here. And they moved, and we were safety. Since they were safety at that time, many Jews' families came to us to shelter.
Because they were
about more than 100 people to our house. Mm-hmm. But we had the big yard.
And during
they
the Kabul?
Yeah, they came. Mm-hmm. And they stayed about 2 days. Uh-huh. We had to feed them. Lot of them, you know, the melon and the cheese and the pita and many others. And we were safety at that time.
Wow. So, do you have friendships with other Muslims, or was that kind of a fluke?
No, I witnessed only this one, but there are any other events. The neighbors, they were the instrument, they were the head of those who attacked the Jews,
right.
Some of them. most of them, they were so. But there were also stories like my like our neighbor. Mm-hmm. And the museum here, at that time, we put graduated to those, gratitude to those who helped the Jews.
In 43 to figure out whether to bring the family.
Yeah.
So she was
well. She was amazing. It was they discussed. My father was about moving from Iraq. He wanted to come to India. India, Sasson and other. He went to India and myself to India. He said no, Israel, Palestine. She came by herself. She was pregnant.
Wow.
She came by herself with a vehicle.
She crossed over.
Vehicle from Baghdad. The driver was a Jew. She came to Israel, to Jerusalem. We had relatives in Jerusalem. And during her stay, she got certificate from the Jewish agency. Mm-hmm. When the British Empire, you know, they gave 100, 150 every year, not more than. One of this quota, it was Jewish agency gave to my mother. She came back to Baghdad with a certificate.
For all the family?
No, with a certificate, yes, but what about the family? But the family, it was, they used not to give the four families permission to leave Iraqis. The underground movement, they took her passport, own passport, and they put there the family in this passport. Pictures, names, my father and sisters. And then she had a passport, she had a certificate. They went to Lake Habaniya, it was not far from Baghdad, about half an hour from Baghdad, the big lake. And the British were there. And she came, they hired airplane, sea airplane, with a passport and certificate. Everything is all right. After the certificate, British. And they took the airplane and they landed in the sea, Dead Sea.
Wow.
Dead Sea, Jerusalem.
Right.
And then she...
Where were you?
I was there in the underground movement.
Right.
I couldn't leave.
But the rest of your family...
So I said, I stayed with my grandmother in Baghdad. And they came here. And she got birth in a few months afterwards in Tel Aviv. And this, he was born here, the last one. Mm-hmm. He's a lawyer here. Now he's in 44, you know, he's 62. Yeah. And he was born here in Tel Aviv. And they started in Tel Aviv. And I came in 45. Mm-hmm. When I came, she took me 1 month to get to Israel. And they were worried. My family here, they heard that I left Baghdad. Mm-hmm. But I left waiting and waiting and waiting. So after 1 month, I came to our house. And I started to work to help the family and myself.
Right.
And they started here to work with the British Army.
Can you go back and tell the story about how you left Iraq through Syria and Lebanon and then down into Israel?
Yes.
With six men, right?
We came to Beirut.
Mm-hmm. By foot, essentially.
Beirut to synagogue. No, you know, from Baghdad to Anna and then Syria.
Uh-huh.
And then they took us. The underground, they took us to me, and we were six young people.
Uh-huh.
We are six. And they took us to the synagogue in Beirut. And the synagogue, we are young, you know, we can be able to take people. They took another 70 people, children, women, many things, to go from Beirut to cross the border to Israel. And from there, we started to work, started to travel and work. And all description about what happened at that time, it was in the book. And I remember that we were so, we took only bread. It was hard bread. And we took it in the water of Hasbani. It was the, not Litani now, it is
Hasbani.
Yes, and we put the bread and the water. It was better to absorb it.
Yeah.
And then they took us at night. At night, and I see from instance, it was a light from the, you know, the problem.
Like a flashlight?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And we reached that one, and it was the man there was one of the Palmach. Palmach, they call it the special unit, Shahar.
Yeah.
They were receiving refugees,
right,
and put them, bring him to Israel.
Right.
And
you arrived at a kibbutz.
But yeah, it is not far from the Kfar Gilati, the kibbutz.
Yeah.
And we went to Kfar Gilati. It was midnight. I remember, you know, we crossed trees of apples.
Uh-huh.
It was so sweet. Mm. And we didn't eat in 2 days. Uh-huh. And I was eating from the apples at the tree. And I had on my back a child, small child,
yeah,
5 or 6 years old, I think, you know, as with Mick pee on the
yeah,
on the my tooth. But suddenly, you know, something is there. And we brought to the dining room of the kibbutz.
Uh-huh.
So they gave us a drink, some hot drink, and sandwich him with marmalade. And then at the same time, after 1 hour, they took us, because of the army, British army,
right,
they took us to other kibbutz.
Uh-huh.
It was, I think, a week previous or week after.
Uh-huh.
It was also the group of refugees, they came, and the British army, they stopped them. And they called them and the kibbutzim, member of the kibbutzim, they mixed together with the refugees.
Ah.
It was also the clash of fire among the army and our people.
And the kibbutzim.
Yeah. So they came, they took us at the midnight to the kibbutz, to other kibbutz, and from there to Rosh Pina.
Uh-huh.
And from Rosh Pina, in the morning, it was morning already, took us to Yagur, Kibbutz Yagur.
Mm-hmm.
From Kibbutz Yagur to Haifa.
Uh-huh.
Haifa is a Moesta Poalim. This is the Council of Workers. Of course, they used to. This is it was the procedure.
Right.
And from Haifa, everyone has to say where to go.
Right.
I knew that Tel Aviv. My family in Tel Aviv. Where Tel Aviv, I didn't know. They gave us some money. And then I remember this, and we stopped in Hedera. I took drunk some of the meats or mushrooms or something. And then I came to Tel Aviv. To Tel Aviv, to the station, bus station. How we have to go? suddenly I saw my sister.
Right. Amazing.
My sister, oh, and she took me to the house.
I guess it was a small country in those
yeah.
days.
Yeah, this is...
That's amazing. And then she said to you, your other brother and sister are the same kibbutz that you came into.
I said, yes. Now, when Kfar Adi, when we were there, I discovered afterwards they had two brothers I have there.
Amazing.
And I didn't know.
And they didn't know. And you
yes.
didn't know.
But 2 days later, I traveled back to Kfar Giladi and to see my brother and sister.
So, and then how much later did the Mossad Aliyah Bet recruit you? A year later?
Well, when I was 45, it was 45. And, 45, I worked here with the British Army until 49.
Okay.
49, they came to me. And, no, but 49, the beginning, 48, 47, 48, I was took it in. For the army and the Haganah. It wasn't Haganah.
Right.
And then we fought 47, 48, 49, 48, the army, the Sahel, Yad Sahel, it was already be a military.
Right.
And then I was company commander in the army. And once I called by the Mossad Aliyah Bet. I called by the Mossad Aliyah Bet. There were another 9 candidates. Mm-hmm. I saw them outside the door. And they spoke to me. I told them, look, I grew among the Iraqi people and I'm ready to go for rescue. And then they had to release me, because an officer I was, my company commander. They referred to my brigade, head of the brigade, it was Ishaq Pundak. Mm-hmm. He called me, he says, look, I was referred from the Mossad, Aliyah Bet. They want to take you. And I refuse. I won't let you.
Yeah.
I thought, well, I don't know you all. What I can say? What can I say? Yeah, I finished. But the Mossad didn't give up. He referred to the Prime Minister Ben Gurion at that time, and he gave an order to release me.
Right. You had to go. They had to go away to Ben Gurion.
And they released me. And I think I had to stay some papers. It was 2-3 hours only. Mm-hmm. It was exactly the information the Mossad from the army, information army. I was there to read about Iraq. Mm-hmm. About 3-4 hours, and then they. And my girl, my wife afterwards, my girl,
Rivka.
Together Rivka, and we came to, they say, tonight you are going. Mm-hmm. And they took me by taxi. The driver afterwards was one of our relatives, he was of my, took us to the airport. I say the airport, and they say, sorry, we responded for another day. And I had to come back. Mm-hmm. And then the other day, it worked. Mm-hmm. And by the airplane, the head of the Mossad, Moshe Karmir. He was a very good man. Referring to me, he said, look, this is the last moment. If you want to give up, if you don't want to go, say it now. I don't know. If I decide, it's finished. And if I decide, what's interesting was, 2 days before I left from Israel, I came to my mother, telling her that I'm going to Iraq. She cried. And she says, look, you as a parcel, I deliver to God, and He will return you. When I came 2 years later home from Iraq back, and from the window she saw me, it was, I was, with, you know, shaving my head because I was in the prison. He said, I told you that God will bring you.
Amazing. Do you want to take a break? So, you had several code names. What were your code names?
Kidnapped in...
Your code names.
Ah, code names,
yeah.
Where?
In Iraq.
And many.
Yeah, so what were they? I wanted to hear them all.
There was many. Official with the Mossad, I was Dror. Dror, it's free, liberty. And my grandson, grandchild, called Dror. Because I have three daughters. I don't have son. And she said, the elder one, she had the first Dror,
right.
Said on my name, Dror.
Right.
And then there, every period, month or 2 months, I had, as a Jew in Baghdad, I mean, I was traveling, moving with the identity card of a Jew in Baghdad. The family who absolved me had a dangerous, not his, their son, called Nisi, and I took his identity, and he left the house because there can't be two Nisi in the same house.
Right. So he went to another.
He came to his relatives, and I stayed at the family Nisi of this identity card.
Okay.
And I was active with identity card as a Jew. Now, when I was traveling south to Basra, or north, traveling by air to Mosul, Kirkuk, I was a merchant, Ibrahim. And then...
A Muslim merchant.
Yeah, and I had identity, I had a merchant, I had a certificate.
Right.
Yeah. And then also, Habib, Zaki. When they discovered the Iraqis after I left Baghdad, I mean, after rescue and all, that was the court. When they mentioned my name, this is Nisim, who called Habib, who called Zaki.
Why did you need Zaki and...
I tell you why, because I didn't want to trace my, they can trace... Habib only.
Right.
But Zaki, perhaps they don't know who is Zaki.
Right.
Yeah. So, and before the people of the Jews in Iraq also, I don't want to be Habib all the time.
Yeah.
Once, part of them they know Habib, the other they know Zaki, right. The other they know Solomon.
So you have to keep it all straight in your head?
No. Just the start.
Yeah, you had to keep it straight. You had to figure out, you had to remember who you told what name to.
Yes, yes.
Very complicated.
No, of course. No, but One name a period, in one period.
Oh, I see.
Yes, not many names, but one. But when I used to travel to by air, bus run, I was a merchant.
Yeah.
Merchant with Salomon, with Salman, Ibrahim Salman.
What was the relationship between you as a shaliach, as an emissary, and the shura, the weapons?
I tell you, when in Baghdad, the underground worked under three branches. One, shura, agana, nu'a. No, this is only teaching.
Right.
And Aliyah. Mm-hmm. I was the emissary of Aliyah. But in Mossad, they told me that when something be dangerous in Baghdad, you will be heading all the branches in Baghdad.
I see.
The Aliyah, the Nu'ah, and the Shura. So I used to go to Shura to give lectures at that time. But and I was also the man who was principal over the wireless.
Right. So you brought the messages to the wireless operator.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. To Israel. And Yitzhak Tzair, one of the four that I knew who worked in the wireless. Operate the wireless.
He said that for the period until you came to Iraq, he had a certain number of, maybe about 40 messages a month. And then when you came, it went to 140 a month.
Yeah.
Or 400 a month. I can't remember the very large number. That's when it really started becoming active.
It worked very, very hard for me because of me.
Yeah. So, how did you orchestrate the Ezra Nehemiah, essentially, the deal with Near East Company? How did you orchestrate it? How did you manage the Ezra Nehemiah from the beginning? How did you decide?
I tell you, first of all, my man, it was my work there. I mean, when I was sent from Baghdad, from Israel to Baghdad, Hazara, to Iraq, my mission was to help those who wanted to struggle, want to cross the border to Persia. So there were 20 people a month, 30 people a month. So I had to be in contact with the struggler, with the smuggler.
Right.
And the smuggler, one of the smugglers, was, I remember him, we were sitting at the planning route for a group of refugees, how to cross toward Bosnia.
So you had about 20 a month.
And then,
the smuggler.
10, Then, you know, sitting with the smuggler, dealing with the roots, better, this is like this. He was resting on me, saying, you want to tell me that you are domestic, one of the people here in Iraq? Well, I was silent. I didn't say nothing. This is the smuggler, how we work with them. We work with smugglers to find the way how to encourage the people that are to cross the border. And we were principal upon more than a few thousands that we sent underground movement. But there were others, Jews. They did it by themselves, and they found smugglers. They were many, many nasty things at that time because they didn't have the experience of how to deal with smuggler.
Right.
But afterwards, more than 12,000 people left Iraq to Persia at that time.
All in all, between you and all the people who...
Yes, and others, together, 12,000.
Wow.
So, meanwhile, I start to work with the head of the community. Yes, Kershentov was. At that time, we had a very good connection, very good relationship we had. Afterwards, something was the situation became bad because people, part of Shura, of the activists of the underground, they wanted to control, I didn't give them, and they sat beside, near Shemtov, and because they got very good trouble, much trouble. But anyhow, start with the Hezker Shemtov,
mm-hmm.
He was close to the Prime Minister.
Uh-huh.
Iraqi, no, sir. Tawfiq Suwaidi. And also I got information from him, from the government, and I had my connections. It was through the CID, through the Nuri Said. I had Moshe Shohet at that time, was close to Nuri Said.
Okay.
I was in contact with every person from the community that they were close to the government.
Right.
So I had all the information immediately, and I was sent it to Israel.
Right.
Well, for instance, cabinet. It was decision of the cabinet. The other day, I had the protocol of the cabinet.
Wow, the next day.
The minutes of the cabinet.
Uh-huh.
How did they wanted to ease the dispatch of the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And this way also, the contact with the Prime Minister, with the head of the community, and who was close to the Prime Minister. And I know, of course, all the situation about the decision of the government to let the Jews to leave Iraq. They thought, Tawfiq Suwaidi thought that no more than 12 or 14,000 would have left
yeah.
Iraqi Jews out of 137,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was close to the community. I thought of 40,000.
Yeah.
Nobody imagined that in 2 months, after the declaration of the immigration, 63,000 registered to leave.
Wow, in the first 2 months.
So those they speak about bombs that we build, this is something, and there's no mean of that, because there's no need.
Right.
Israel, I got cables. Please, slow. We don't have accommodation.
Yeah.
They send us, we have tents coming from India on the ship on the way to Israel.
Yeah.
Tents. They didn't have tents even.
Wow.
So to see
it. And then eventually it got to 100,000. Eventually the number became 105,000 over the
105,000 straight to Israel. To leave the airport or via Cyprus.
Right.
And then another 15,000, those 18,000, they came from Persia or other part of the world.
Right. Now, how was the decision reached by the government to create this law, this
yes.
immigration law?
I tell you, they had reasons.
Right.
They had reasons. The main reason was that we succeeded to bribe the judges, to bribe the police. and to let those Jews pass the border.
Right.
And the governor of Basra, he wrote many cables, and the other he has no control. The Jews are living. The government was at that time convinced that they had to do some action.
Right.
I mean, they said trouble. They say, we send the 14,000 troublers from the in the underground movement, and the others we stay in Baghdad.
Wait, say that again. They were convinced that only
14,000 travelers only. They will leave.
Right. So they essentially created this law because they didn't like the idea of
Tamar, if they would believe at that time that more than 100,000 will leave, they wouldn't claim them in me.
Right.
They wouldn't claim them.
So they created the law because they didn't like the idea of Jews escaping illegally and bribing people to get out. They wanted it to be formal and legal.
Yes, I tell you, because all the borders from the north until the about 1,000 kilometers,
right.
It was open.
Right.
And the hatred between Iraq and Iran is not the last year or the, this is hundreds of years. And they wouldn't accept the situation that the border is so open.
Right. It's an embarrassment.
Yeah.
It was an embarrassment.
Yeah.
I see. Interesting. Amazing. Now, Yehezkel Shem Tov, was helpful in doing this. What was his job?
He wasn't head of the community, he was deputy.
Okay.
We worked underground to help that he would be the deputy of the count. And he was a merchant.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he was, type of those merchants of Iraqi Jews, that they, everyone, he had to obey them. If he give order or say something, and we oppose what he says, it is he will be found. He will not accept it. The problem was, and when I came, I was only at that time 26.
Uh-huh.
26, a boy, coming to give me instructions.
Right.
Because we didn't want to put all the secrets on the hand of somebody, head of the community, if they had the community. Not to embarrass them, not to close the information.
Like
how to collect the money. We got money from the Mossad.
Right.
And we financed the poor people. And then also all the wireless,
right.
And the operation, the about the airplane,
right.
And this is all the activity we did it.
Mm-hmm.
How to close it to him? It was very difficult. And what he says at that time, once of the Barnett, he was sitting with us. Barnett, he was
really
very nice
Barnett.
Man. Yes, he was powerful, like British. He was Jew. But he busted. He was so. He was coming to the airport.
Yeah.
The Jews, the bus of the Jews, and so to the authority.
Yeah.
Why you don't let them go? Let them go.
Yeah.
He was shouting, and he made the work like this.
Ah.
Yes, he was a representative of the community. Representative of the operation. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're sitting together with him. And I was saying to the head of the council, Abu Jamil, Abu Jamil, and this way what you want? You stop the immigration. it can't be work. He said 6 million were gone, another 100,000.
Who said that?
He said.
Who was first?
Shemtov.
Shemtov.
Yeah, the 6 million, another 100,000. I was astonished. I told
him. What did he mean? I don't understand. He meant.
They can go 100,000. Yes, yes. When I said you in danger, the whole immigration. So he responded. That's what happened to 6 million to 100.
Why had he endangered the operation?
Because he wanted to get everything by his hands.
He wanted to handle everything himself.
Yeah. And I was in Hesked, Abu Jameel.
Yes.
If you say that, you have to resign.
Right.
I told him. To resign, and he took Siddhara, you know what, this is Siddhara, this is the cup, the hat, this is the Siddhara.
Mm-hmm.
He took the Siddhara and put it on the ground. Wow. What he saw, from that time we had the trouble, you know, from the trouble, and it is in my book,
yeah.
all the cables.
Right.
So difficulties, anyhow, and instead of him, the interior minister, he appointed a committee, public committee, and we worked with the community very good, very good.
With the Jewish community?
Jewish community, yeah. Sasan Abedi was the head, Moshe Shohet, Abraham Kibir, this is the head of the Jewish, very respected people.
Right.
They were against Shem Tov. And I was also protecting him.
Right. Now, was Shemtov had stepped down at that point?
Yes.
The committee replaced him.
Yes, but he continued with the committee, but not the operation.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of how much money? Do you have a sense of how much money the Mossad spent?
I think more than $500,000.
Dinar. Dinar, which is how many dollars?
At that time was $4. The dinar was $4.
The dinar was $4.
Yes, but the dollar of today is not the dollar at that time.
Right. Amazing.
One more.
Sure, thank you. Can you tell the story of how Operation Nehemia got its title?
What?
Can you tell the story of how Operation Nehemia got its title, how it was called Ezra Nehemia? It was because of a Ma'ariv article, right? A Ma'ariv headline.
Well,
why was it called Ezra Nehemia?
Well, Ezra Nehemia, because of the history, you know. Ezra Nehemia, the Jews at that time, under Ezra and Nehemia, they came to Israel.
Right.
Ezra, two prophets at that time.
I think you told in your book about how there was a debate about what to call it.
Yes, they say
one day Ma'ariv.
The market, they say the carpet.
Right.
And then Ezra Nehemia. Not, I didn't give the name, not
right.
myself, yes.
Right. Okay. Now, can you start to talk about your arrests, your three arrests? Why you were arrested?
Four. The first time, I was dealing with the smuggler to send people. They were activists of underground, and he, the smuggler, another smuggler, there were two or three. And I discovered afterward that the house, it was known, it was known before the police, they smuggle Martians there. And they surrounded the house, the police. And I'm inside. What are you doing here? I said, look, I wanted to smoke.
Uh-huh.
And it was Ramadan feast, you know.
Yeah.
and Ramadan they didn't eat or smoke outside. And they don't smoke at all. And I entered the house to smoke. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, they took us to the prison and then to arrest. It took us 2 weeks or something like that. That was another time that because of that tension with the head of community, Shem Tov and others, and it was also another reason that I was also, I was sent cable that I want to finish the mission because I came to Iraq for 1 year. It was more than 1 year. And they said, look, why? Why you want to finish? I want to get married. Mm-hmm. I said, look, they say. They managed Rivka, my wife, passport, and suitcase. And she was ready to be sent to Iran. And I ought to come from Basra to Iran to get married in Iran. And she was waiting. And she asked Moshe Karmil, the head of the Mossad, no, they said, well, we are waiting, we are waiting. They knew that I was arrested. When I was crossing, I was about crossing the border with another five people. Four people, we were together four. We were surrounded by the police. One in one of the places near the river. And then also they took us to the prison. What are you doing here? Told them, look, I finished secondary school, graduated, and I have no work. They don't give us work. And I want to cross the border to find work in Iran.
Yeah.
So afterward I was fined and so on. This is the next time. Third time. That time it was when I was, that was an accident with the bicycle.
The traffic accident, right.
And the unit is, he got out from a small street to the street and I gave him to the with a bicycle and the people came, you know, mob. There were about 50-60 people around. They didn't know whether I'm Jew or not. It was one of them. He was so nasty. He cursed me. Uh-huh. And I cursed him back.
Yeah.
Because this is the way with the Muslim. You have to be, strong.
Right.
And then we took the injured one to the car, another two one. And we went to the police station that we used to pay the head of the police. I didn't know him, of course, but I know that we were paying him. And he came with the anger. What are you doing in the world with the cars? And they give him this race. We took him to the hospital. And I ran to the hospital, one of our people, Yusuf Basri, Leif Basri.
Right.
Yes, he was hanged afterwards.
Right.
He managed that the injured one get 3 days treatment only.
Yeah.
And he got only three days, and he finished I him. So, it was a court afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an order to go to the court. I came to the judge. It was a small room like this.
Mm-hmm.
The judge, it was officer, captain. He was standing by him. And I came, so I discovered that captain, or that's one who cursed me and I cursed him back.
Yeah.
And at that time, captain of the army, he was something big in the Iraqi army, prestige. And the judge asked me, how many days you were in the, we were arrested? I don't know, nothing, you should arrest him for 3 days, there's something. The officer told him that he saw papers. I saw, but the judge didn't listen to the papers. He just asked me about the prison. He said that you weren't in the prison, you will go to the prison. So gave me 2 weeks in the prison. I brought to the prison, and they are a member of the underground. They didn't know me, of course. They know just I'm active in the underground. I want to give the barber money, not to shave me, but I couldn't. They didn't succeed, so he shaved me, put off my. Then I remember I took 10 dinars at that time in one of the activists.
Mm-hmm.
Till now he's laughing, he say, it is, you remember the 10th dinar in the prison?
Yeah.
then I was also with the, when we caught together, you'd catch on myself. This is was my mistake. It was my mistake because I was so confident in myself. It was too much.
You went shopping.
Yes. When asked me to go to shop, and two Israelis, the daylight, to go to make shopping, it is very dangerous.
Yeah.
I parked the car somewhere. I took him from one of the corner. He didn't know where I was living, and I didn't know where he was living. Parking, and then we got into the store. We went to the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't find what he wanted. I don't remember papers or the belt or something. When he get down, by the entrance, it was refugee. Palestinian.
Yeah.
He knew Yutka Tacher from Israel, from Akko. And when we got out of the entrance of the store, he spoke to the police, the CID, and they came and they caught us when we were about 50 meters from our entrance. They surrounded us, the two of us, and they stopped the car, taxi. Please, 12, please, enter. One of the three I knew. We were one of the three of the police,
okay.
Secret police. We were studying elementary school together. He was sitting by me, and the examination he was copying from me, and the teacher was finding me.
Right.
Yeah, and I didn't like him.
Right.
He was one of, and afterwards he discovered that he was an officer. So we were in the car and the taxi. I was in the back with two police from both sides, and he was by the driver and by my friend, the man who I knew, the officer. And I knew nothing whether Yutka Tacher had something on his body or not, paper or something. But I had a paper. What the paper was at that time, was a problem with the prisoners, our prisoners in the school, in the prison,
yeah.
Underground. And we talked to the Minister of Interior to let them, to release them, about 5,000 dinars, something to give him.
Yeah.
And he said he wants to be attacked by the newspapers, once or two. And the day, the other day, it was something, it was an article attacking him. Why is keeping the prisoners, they are eating, they are so, and then they will be our enemies.
Right.
Why don't release them? But I told them to how to get them out. And I put them, it was handcuffed. I took from this pocket, and the other pocket, and I put the cushion out back.
Wow.
They didn't know that I was handkerchiefs and there.
Yeah.
And I was clean afterwards.
Yeah.
But he was, afterwards I discovered that he had some paper, small notebook with number, numbers of telephones and others.
Gutka had this.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
Yeah. And we were brought to station, police station. They asked me, who is the man? I don't know him. I didn't speak. They asked him, who are you? He said, I am Ismail Salhoun. And his passport, the Iranian passport. When they start to speak in Iranian, they couldn't, he couldn't answer in Iranian. So they referred to me. This is a boy then from Israel, I mean, a boy, a Jew there, he will tell us immediately. They took me to other station. The other station was horse station.
Okay.
They had a chain on the wall for the horses. And they lived there, took two hands and one leg. And then they used to beat me.
They took two hands and one leg and
yeah,
put them on the chain?
Yeah, yeah. And they was changing from time to time one of the hand or leg. Took me about 3 days. Three nights and 4 days.
That way.
Yes, trotting. And the police, he was saying to me, Ihji, speak. Curse me.
Yeah.
Curse me. Because I didn't curse him. I didn't say nothing.
Yeah.
Still, I will. They broke three teeth, my tooth.
Mm-hmm.
And one, I couldn't hear about 3 months in one ear.
Yeah. Oh.
After 4 days, they took me out to a room, other prisoners. Cassie, they were waiting for their court. And they were very impressed. This I said nothing after torching. And they gave us, this is water and tea and the coffee. They were saying one, he was murdered, how many murdering he did, and the others. Well, I didn't listen because I was so tired. I was so. So they took me for the judge. For the first time, I was shaving myself. They shaved them. And I saw Yutka Tajir also there.
Yeah.
And to say that, given evidence, how we, who are we? And I said for the first time that I was in orchestra hall, and he was sitting by me.
But you were in an orchestra? What did you mean?
Like, I knew this, there is an orchestra there.
Okay.
As I say, I was in the extra. If they won't ask me tickets, how did they purchase, and I knew nothing.
Right.
And he was sitting by me. And he asked me whether I knew a Jew from Baghdad.
Uh-huh.
And I told him I'm a Jew.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted to buy something in store. And I had nothing to do. I am unemployed. And I went with him to the store. This is the story. I say it, you know, slowly.
Right.
He knew it. He got it. And he has to give an evidence also.
Mm-hmm.
He said he would give it in English. He said it's English, like mine.
Uh-huh.
And they had to translate it into Arabic.
Uh-huh.
And I discovered they didn't know how to translate it. They asked me to translate it. And I translated.
Okay.
But I was very careful, you know. That's perhaps this dilemma, something like they. I mean, I was afraid of it. That's right. And I said it, the evidence.
Right.
But I had to change something to make it similar to the eczema of mine. And this is finished.
Wow.
And then
they released you.
I had to stay there, but I had my brother Mandelawi.
Uh-huh.
I think I gave you his name, no?
No.
It's very important to see him.
Okay.
It is hard to say it in English. In English you will say it.
Okay, I can do it in Hebrew.
Mandelawi.
He was your pretend brother.
That's right, pretend brother. That's
past.
Right. And the poor man, he had to come to the prison to see me. It was not easy,
mm-hmm.
You see. And he came, he's describing, I don't remember, but he, I saw you like a piece of meat. After the torturing, he brought food.
Yeah.
I couldn't eat. And he was continue like this all the time, the company. But afterwards, they discovered who were I.
Uh-huh.
And they traced him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was helped by head of the museum one. And he was transferred to Iran. Naim Adelawi. And I stayed afterwards, you know, when they took me. When I was in the prison, and I was accompanied by the police with a rifle, where to go to the CID,
uh-huh.
CID, the secret police. They used to take from prisoners evidences.
Right.
And I didn't want to go to the police because they were looking for me.
Uh-huh.
So I gave him back. I gave him the police, I fell him,
mm-hmm.
And I went away to my people who were waiting for me in one of the cafe in Baghdad. And from there, they took me to the house of one of the activists, and then we worked there at night. We digged a big hole to put their radio,
right, the wireless.
That we had, the wireless.
Yeah.
And from there, they took us, Naim, I let Naim, who was a very good man, took us to his house,
uh-huh.
Naim and myself.
Uh-huh.
And we stayed there, we used to go to the roof, you know, then the summer to the roof. At 10 o'clock at night, at 4 o'clock we had to, so the neighbor don't feel that somebody else, somebody strange, they are in this house.
Yeah.
And I stayed there about five days.
Uh-huh.
And 5 days, and he was bringing the newspapers in Arabic.
Uh-huh.
Newspapers are, you are looking for Habib? He's in Tel Aviv. The journalists.
The journalists.
They are laughing on the police. They are, yeah.
Ah,
yeah.
He already escaped.
They ask him in the newspaper for Habib.
Right.
He is in Tel Aviv.
Joking.
Yeah.
Joking. Yeah.
And then I had my people. They came with Ronnie Barnett. To at night, I remember it was, of course, with the torture light, to give me the map how to get out.
How to get to
from there to the airport.
Because you realized at that point it was too dangerous to stay.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Because of what happened.
And who was the driver of the car who took me to the airport? Is one of the friends. Of member of parliament, Jews, Batat. He knew him.
Uh-huh.
And he told the driver, look, I have something very dangerous, the police, they did some false on him, after him, please, we take him to the airport. And they took me to the airport at midnight. It was a shift, of course.
Right.
It was with the employees, high employees, and the officers. They, at night, they drink, they go to the bar,
right.
And I was with the battle
uh-huh.
at night until we go to the airport. The airport, they'll have to go down and to go under the face and the fence
right.
of the airport. It was about more than 1 kilometer. I had to, and I was waiting for the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the airplane, big one, like. And they stopped by me when the engine is hot
mm-hmm.
before taking off. So they let me the rope, and I climbed the rope. To the inside the airplane, and there were immigrants there speaking about it. They took me for the police and the tax and the others. They took from many people. They are talking
people
about
there.
Those what they happened, what they passed from the police
right.
at the airport before taking off.
Right.
Yes. Well, we took off. And after 4 hours, we landed in Israel.
Yeah.
When we landed, they didn't know whether I was inside or not, in the Mossad.
They didn't know you were on the plane?
I didn't know, of course,
yeah.
if I was rescued or not, perhaps. In 93, I mean 13 years ago,
mm-hmm.
we brought here the pilots,
yeah.
those who are still, they were still alive,
mm-hmm.
who dealt with the immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, among them, Lipa. He was passed away.
Lipa, yeah.
Lipa, he was giving an evidence at night, we made an event
mm-hmm.
for them. And Shlomo Hillel was, and others, and myself. And he was saying like this. He said, the Mossad, they elected a crew, and the crew, they told them that you have to save something, me, very dangerous man from Baghdad.
Uh-huh.
And he said, we came, the airplane was standing, and I saw somebody come. He was very dirty with the mud and so.
Uh-huh.
And he was outside. and we took him. Mm-hmm. And he said, I didn't know, and they didn't know, what would have happened, something, if something would be a mistake or
wrong. Yeah.
Well, no answer. Was no answer.
Yeah.
When I was in the airplane inside, I told the crew that you saved a lot.
You saved a lot.
Why you saved a lot? Not only myself, because I knew secrets. I knew many personalities in Baghdad. I knew the community. I knew the operation and many things. If I was cutting again, I don't know how much you can stand under the torture.
Right.
How much? It's not easy.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course not.
Yeah. And then, well, I came here to Israel. I had to out of the airport to get. I had no paper. Who was it?
Right.
Yeah. Well, they told me to arrive.
Right.
So I got certificate 14th of May, 51, that I was out of the airport.
Right.
And then they brought me to my mother.
Wow.
Then my mother, as I said, you see this, I told you, I threw you to God, he will bring you back.
Amazing. Amazing story. So one thing that I didn't quite understand from reading your book and also Shlomo Hillel's book, I read both, were the pilots were paid.
What?
The pilots were paid, right?
Yeah.
They weren't doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. They really, this was a business venture for the pilots. Or were they...
No, the pilots, they did it as a
goodwill.
Yes, yes.
Goodwill.
Yeah.
But were they paid?
Yeah, they were paid,
they
of
were
course,
paid.
By Mossad there.
Right. Okay, mostly Americans.
They were American, they were South Africa,
okay.
They were Ireland,
uh-huh.
From Ireland also.
Wow.
And after they came here, that we gave very good hospitality in Israel,
yeah.
They were very, very satisfied. Mm-hmm. And then I continued with the connection with them,
yeah.
That was United States. With them, I
wonderful.
Yes, we spoke to them, and I was one night we spent at this house of Milan.
Okay. Now we're getting close to the end. I know this is long, but I want you to tell the story about Yosef Basri and Shalom and Sarah Shalom and what happened to them.
You know, Shalom, I remember that we dig together about the wireless operator. And together, he and myself.
Uh-huh.
And I told him, Shalom, tomorrow morning you have to leave. He told me, all right, I will do it, but I have to go I have the trouser and the, to be prepared, to be repaired. And he was waiting for the trouser. And then the police called him and said,
and when was Yosef Basri come?
But
Yosef Basri, when was he?
Yosef Basri, they discovered name of Yosef. They was looking for Yosef, but not for Yosef Basri, other Yosef, Betalahmi. They came to the house when he was in the house. But when he was in the house, he stood at the carpet in the room, but in the cupboard.
In the cupboard, yeah.
And the police came into the room, and they heard something, so they opened
the
cupboard and they called them. Who are they? Who are you? And then Yosef, where Yosef. Well, you know, they told them, the both of them, of course, they accused them of something false and terribly false.
Right.
About
spying.
Spying. It is spying and the bombs.
Right.
They threw bombs.
Yeah.
Yes, and this is the Yosef Basri. We studied together in school,
yeah.
In a men's school, and he left Iraq and his way to Israel, to Iran,
right.
Through Iran. And from Iran, our people, the intelligence people, they sent him back to Baghdad, to Iraq. To have a spy. And he worked very well. He had very good
right.
Reputation. Yes.
Now the issue of the 5 bombings. The bombings. Is there still a debate today about whether Jews perpetrated the bombings themselves?
Nothing.
Or people understand?
First of all, there was no need for bombing to encourage Jews to leave. The bombing, it was at Beit Knesset, at the synagogue, Mesudat Shem Tov. When they did it, I did all my efforts at that time to go and to have evidence one of the injured people,
mm-hmm.
a Jew. He was in the synagogue. He saw who threw the bomb
right.
from veranda on the street.
Wow.
As a police, Iraqi police.
He was an Iraqi policeman.
Yeah, Iraqi policeman. And he had to give the evidence, but it was very dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, I took 5 people from our activists to go to the hospital. And we gave them blood.
Yeah.
And we asked the police, the judge, to come and to have evidence for him.
Right.
But the judge, he didn't do it at that night. He did it at 9 o'clock when 8:30 he passed away.
The judge.
The judge. No, I mean the injured one.
Oh, the injured one.
Yeah.
Right. The injured one passed away.
8:30 he passed away. And the judge came at 9 o'clock.
Oh, my God.
So if this evidence was written, taken, and they couldn't, everything it was.
Right.
Yeah. And afterwards, when Shalom Saleh, one of these, in the prison, he asked the police, he attacked the police, why you arrested that one and you released him? They arrested him, but they released him immediately.
Uh-huh.
So I took my conclusion towards that the government of Iraq did that.
Right.
Nuri Said and others, they did that.
Right.
I thought once Istiqlal, it was opposition,
uh-huh.
but afterwards I came to decision this was the government of Iraq.
Are there Jews who think that other Jews did the bombings, that the Mossad did it? Are there people
no,
out there who think
I tell
that?
You, it was 6:51, mm-hmm. 55 years. Until now, I did it. I also seeked after an evidence, somebody,
yeah.
Jews from Jews from Iraq,
uh-huh.
to see. I saw it. I know who do it.
Right.
Nothing.
Nobody.
This was a journalist that I brought him to the court.
Uh-huh.
Journalist. He also accused, he said, he published that the emissaries from Iraq, from Israel, did it.
Yeah.
And I called him to the court.
Uh-huh.
And he asked about 200 people to ask them whether they had evidence.
Right.
Nothing.
Nobody did.
So he was in the United States,
uh-huh.
the journalist. He sent a woman, as a friend, to me, please, close the stage, and we will also, I mean, we will say
he had written that the Jews did it
on the name of journalists.
Right.
And they came to the court, and they said that Newman, we are very sorry what we have done. We didn't know not all the facts that were upon us, and so on. So.
And it was
the book
it was
also.
A U.S. paper.
But?
It was a United States paper. It was
no, he was
local.
No, no. A journalist. He was a successful journalist here,
yeah.
And he went to the United States for living. And
yeah, I see.
But you know, the police and still there are people, Iraqis, Jews, they believe the police there, the false accusation,
right.
Then they that we say that such a thing that didn't happen.
There are Jews who believe that.
Yeah, yes, still believe. Yeah. And then the Palestinians and others, they still keep this one accusation all the time.
Right.
And all the time they say in Arabic, I read it, they say this Israel, the Zionism, used cruel instruments for pushing the Jews outside Arab countries.
I think that's it. Thank you, Mordecai.